Wednesday, July 11th, 2024. I'm Rim.
I'm Scott.
And this is Geek Nights. Tonight we are talking about my favorite kind of pollution, noise pollution.
Let's do this.
So, way back, like many years ago, when I went on that bike tour upstate with you, the one where you camp in the field, I bought a tent for that trip because I needed a tent anyway. Like, I have the last time I owned a tent before that was
so,
when I was
so did I. It's still in the closet and has not been used since I used it for two of those and then they stopped it.
That's a shame. You
I was actually thinking about it's like
you want to go camp?
I don't know. Should I use it or should I get rid of it to save space?
You should use it because if you want to do a mini camping trip, like not, I wouldn't ask you to come on the kind of trip that Emily and I do by default, which is hike 16 miles into the middle of the wilderness, then camp. But if you want to do a camping trip, we'd be more than happy to bring like all our water filtration and like all our cooking shit. And all you'd have to bring is your tent and stuff to sleep. We can handle the rest.
I'm more, you know, the only thing, I mean, not that I don't enjoy a camping, right? It's like, I like to sleep outdoors and smell of woods and, you know, eat a food.
I feel like
your
style of camping is more like camp at a place where there's like a lake or something. Yeah.
Right. But I don't need the glamping where it's like you're basically set up a whole house.
Yeah.
Right. That's not necessary.
But you want
to go
more
that,
than I only have
to
what
go
I can
that
fit
far.
In. You don't. You
but
want
I
more
also,
than I only have what I could fit into a backpack that I can carry at least 20 miles.
Yeah. But I also don't. You know, there's no reason for me to struggle.
Yeah. Oh, you think we struggle? So I, as much as we do backpack camping, like now I bought a basically full-size butane burner to carry, and we carry a cast iron pan because I prioritize good food over saving some weight. Like, I don't get these hiking people because they hike less distance than us, and they're, like, cutting the end off of their toothbrush to save 0.1 ounces on their pack. I'm just going to strap a cast iron to my back. I don't give a shit. So I've had this tent for a super long time. It's an REI Direct tent. Like, I bought it from REI. It's like their house brand, and it's a super good tent. Now, when I bought the tent, which was like a decade ago at this point, that tent was like so much more advanced than any tent I had ever used because I hadn't been camping in like 15 years before that like I was shocked at how easy it was, how light it was compared to like the tents I used to use as a kid. But now this tent's pretty old, and I was shopping for, like, what's the best tent you could buy today? And, yeah, they've continued
to
advance.
You don't need that. The best tent you could buy is meant for, like, you know, going up a mountain and camping, like, on the edge of a cliff.
Oh, no, but for me, I was thinking, like, all right, this is the tent I got now. Could I get an equivalent-sized tent that is, like, significantly lighter and smaller, but is otherwise, like, just as big and nice? And the answer is yes. But the answer also is a tent that good costs upwards of $400. And I did not pay $400 for this tent.
Yeah, if that's your main hobby, that's perfectly reasonable. Yeah.
So we're still carrying
it. If you're using it a few times, maybe, you know, more less than once a year or less than even five times a year, that's not worth it.
But it's the REI Co-op Half Dome tent. And backpacking people kind of sneer at it because it's giant compared to the kinds of tents they use. But, you know, talking about not struggling, those tiny tents are not comfortable. Like,
you don't say.
A slightly bigger tent weighs a slight amount more and is just so much nicer. But
yeah, I mean, basically those tiny tents that they use, the only thing that they have over a sleeping bag is it protects you from rain. And it's like it's basically just like an umbrella that sticks to the ground that you don't have to worry about keeping it in place.
So anyway, this tent is old and it had a problem a couple of years ago. It's so old that the shock cord inside of it supports because it's a self-supporting tent. So, you know, you take
so
it has
mine,
little poles with shock cord inside of it. Shock cord, if you're not familiar, is effectively just string that is springy.
Thinner,
it's like elastic.
Thinner bungee cord.
Yep. But very durable bungee cord. The shock cord that came in the poles degraded to the point that it didn't have any stretch at all left. So I had to replace it and or buy a new tent, and I'm not going to buy a whole new tent. There's nothing wrong with it. I could replace shock cord. I know how to do things. So I go online and I see at REI, they're like, if the shock cord degrades, you can replace it with, and they recommend quarter inch shock cord. Doesn't really matter what kind. And they sell quarter inch shock cord. So I buy the quarter inch shock cord and I relearn how to tie a knot that I didn't fucking remember how to tie because
YouTube can help with that.
Exactly. So I learned the exact right knots to use and I start replacing the shock cord. And it was really, really, really hard to replace it for a bunch of reasons I won't waste my time explaining. Like,
yeah, it sounds like a thing that would be difficult.
It was really difficult. And I was really mad at it to the point that I ended up not only replacing about 2/3 of the shock cord and the rest of it, I cut off the ends, I spliced the new shock cord into the end, and I just replaced a little bit. So it's a pain. And now even using the tent is slightly more of a pain because of this shock cord. So recently, I was looking at new tents, and I stumbled upon a Reddit post where someone was like, is it just me, or is it really hard to replace the shock cord in these REI co-op tents? And all the responses were, oh, buddy, you listen to REI. You bought the wrong shock cord. You got to buy 3/16-inch shock cord. Quarter-inch shock cord is a fucking nightmare to get into this thing, you fool. You moron. How dare you read the official instructions?
Well, wouldn't quarter-inch be...
too thick. It's too thick.
Yeah.
So the knot's a little too big, and it's like it doesn't work well.
I was thinking of eighth. Eighth would be smaller than 3/16, but a quarter is more than 3/16.
So I bought from a different shop because REI does not sell 3/16-inch shock cord. They sell a bunch of other sizes. So I bought some.
They're buying shock cords and manufacture the tent. Wouldn't the shock cord they sell just be the wholesale stuff they're buying at the tent factory? Just
apparently not.
Set some aside, cut it up, and
apparently
sell
not.
It in packages.
So anyway, I buy this new shock cord, and on a cursory attempt to see how it's like night and day. It's so easy. It's so much better. It is absolutely perfect. So I'm just going to get rid of all that fucking quarter inch shock cord that I spent hours cramming into these poles for no reason.
Bad documentation.
Yep. It's one thing because we both know people who will have a problem and will not even like do the cursory search to see if there is a like documented solution to the problem, and they'll just make up a bad solution and then complain about their bad solution.
I can't blame you if the documentation's wrong, right? It's like you got. I can blame someone for not thinking to look up instructions. I can blame them for not being able to read instructions. I'll even blame someone for asking ChatGPT
how to make pizza and then putting glue in their pizza. Like that's your fault, but.
Not reading the instructions properly, not following them properly. Right? It's like there's all these ways the person could be the source of the problem. But if the instructions are just wrong.
Yep. I was a little mad about that.
That's the fault of the person who made the instructions, not the follower of the instructions.
If anyone out there needs any quarter-inch shock cord, I have a shit ton, and I'll just mail it to you. Just let me know. Hit me up in the Discord or something.
I don't know. What else is it good for?
You know what it's good for? Lashing things to backpacks. Making webbing, bunch of rock climbing stuff that you wouldn't care about.
I don't think I do anything that requires.
Yep. And replacing the shock cord inside of something that already used shock cord, but the shock cord wore out. So in the news, really briefly, we don't need to dwell on it, but you might be seeing, if you were the kind of person who looks at the news, you might notice that there's one guy who's running for president who's not a fascist in America, and there is some big talk, and there's actually a real possibility that he'll be replaced by a different person who is not a fascist who's running for president. And all I have to say about that is it does not matter the name of the person. The only thing that matters is voting for the Democrat, because that is the one who is not a fascist. There is no other option in this election, and it should not matter what name is on the ballot right now.
No, it doesn't matter at all.
Nope.
Like they could put up, you know.
I would vote for a potato and I would vote for literally anything. Straight Democrat.
I guess they could. It's not impossible that they would just be like, fuck it. Your choice is fascist or fascist. That could happen.
I mean, yeah, if that happens, then you're way beyond voting at that point.
Right. They could just cave in and be like, fine, we'll just pick a literal Republican to be the Democratic nominee. Here you go. It's not impossible.
Yeah. But I cannot stress
it. It's very unlikely, though. It's going to be someone who is. Yeah. Right. You can't. Yeah. You know.
So I'm going to go out of limb right now and say, you know, we try to endorse candidates in elections just like if we can. We're a journalistic outlet, technically, by the strictest, barest, weakest definition of a journalist. But we formally endorse literally everyone the Democrats nominate in the 2024 election in every ballot, no exceptions.
I mean,
what else are you going to do? You can vote for the crazy guy with a brain worm or Hitler too. Like, that's it.
Even It's like, there's Democrats out there that, you know what? They got problems.
Yeah.
They support policies that I don't agree with. And there may be some corrupt ones out there too, right?
Yeah.
You know, who are in with the corporations.
Look at New York. We had a mayor election. I voted for someone who was super cool in the primary. They didn't win the primary. A guy I really don't like won the primary, but you know what? I still voted for him in the general election because the alternative was a dangerous, crazy guy.
Right. It's like, you know, people like, oh, there's no difference. They both suck. It's like, no, one of them sucks way, 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 way more.
This isn't like a stale sandwich versus a slightly moldy sandwich. This is like an okay sandwich versus just poop, just like dangerous poop filled with disease.
Mm-hmm.
But in some absolutely bonkers news that broke today and might have somewhat significant ramifications for the world that are actually worrying. So this is from CNN. They posted an exclusive this morning. The U.S. and Germany have foiled multiple known specific Russian plots to assassinate the CEOs of European corporations.
Mm.
Like, this is, of course, obviously related to the war in Ukraine. And you should read this article because this is... I saw the headline, and you know, normally when you see a headline like that, you assume, yeah, something bad happened, but I'm going to read the details and see a whole bunch of qualifications. But then I get into the article, and the article is actually way worse than what I thought it was, and way more specific and way more widespread. I feel like World War III kind of already started, and we're just in the middle of it, and we'll see where this goes. But I personally think NATO needs to be involved in Ukraine as soon as possible directly. I don't feel like there's any other choice.
Mm. Nothing I can do about it either way.
Nope. Except vote for Democrats, because Democrats will do something. But if we vote for the Republicans, they're just going to abandon Ukraine and all those people are going to die.
Pretty much.
So you got some news?
Yeah. So Florida, where the bad people are in charge of basically everything.
Yep.
There was an interesting story because there's a new law that's going in Florida that's going to require transparency for red light cameras. You know, they set up red light cameras at intersections that automatically give people tickets when they run a red light.
Yep.
And you think, well, Florida is a place that loves cars. I don't think they have public transportation at all, other than the Disney monorail and... shuttle buses from the airport.
I feel like there's more mass transit,
golf carts
in and around
aren't
Disney
really
World
public transportation
than in the whole rest of Florida combined.
And I guess Amtrak does go there, and then they have airports.
Nah.
And that's about it, right? And there must be a bus in Miami somewhere, but I don't know, right? Who uses it?
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe someone does use it. Tell me if the buses in Miami are any good.
The only person I still know who lives in Florida is my dad, and he died. Yeah, but he lives there because anyway, I don't visit him for a
reason. There's no subways in Florida is the point. There's no trams that I know of other than, again, Disney
World. No one should go to Florida unless forced to. It's a dangerous, fucked up place.
Yeah, definitely not going to Florida if I can, if at all possible to avoid. Anyway, there are towns in Florida that are basically funding themselves, right, significantly. We're talking like 15% of the city's revenue, which, you know, it's not 50%. It's not like most of their money, but it's like if you suddenly lose 15% of your budget, you're really in a bad place, right? So it's enough to where, like, they can't go without it. And so, or they'd have to make it up somewhere else, or they'd have to suffer significantly and cut back on a bunch of stuff. So they want to have, you know, transparency and like approval, like, you know, and you know, whatever. And basically it's sort of like, you know, how, you know, Ohio has like speed traps famously to like, you know, fund themselves. And there's a lot of interesting different things going on in this story.
Oh, well, right? Yeah. This whole topic is complex, and my opinions are actually kind of all over the place on different aspects of
red
light cameras.
Yeah, there's so many aspects, but the aspects I want to focus on, right, is that number one, we've heard, at least I've heard up until this point, that red light cameras were an example of traffic enforcement, like making things safer. And this article sort of contradicts that. Mm-hmm. They're saying actually in some of the intersections that have red light cameras have more crashes because people notice the camera, they stop short. They were going to run the red light instead, yep. I guess. And I guess, you know, what happens is there's a rear end collision.
Now,
the
of course, one thing
them,
that's important to point out in that situation, because actually I remember a similar scandal in Ohio when I was a kid, because I grew up right like near Ohio and we'd drive down there for Cedar Point all the time. In those cases, the people who get rear ended are not the ones at fault. Let's skip the whole cars as a system and the fault of the system. But if we get past that point, the person who rear ends that person is still like, that is a bad person, and there's a fault, and they are actually
right. No, it's if the red light camera wasn't noticed by by either of the people, both of them would have run a red light.
Yep.
They were right. They
and
were,
to be clear, running a red light, regardless of every other car issue, fuck you. Running red lights is absolutely unacceptable in any circumstance except being chased by like gunmen, which doesn't happen.
Yeah, even in the places in the earth where we would say that have like the best transportation networks, like the Amsterdams or whatever, there are still traffic control lights of some kind in places. And they depend on people obeying them, right? If you go to Amsterdam, if you ignore the lights, there will be a crash.
Like,
right?
if I know you, if I'm in your car and you run a red light, like, we're probably not friends anymore. That's going to be a whole conversation. That's a fucked up thing
to do.
Or
at least we're pulling over or getting out of the car. Yep. It's like, we're not driving with you anymore.
I've never run a red light or even a stop sign in the middle of nowhere at any point in my entire life.
I think I ran one time ever because I didn't even see that it was there because it was, you know, poorly done, right?
Yeah, I guess if I didn't, if there was one hidden by a tree, I guess I wouldn't know if I ran it.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's the first thing is, you know, I'm always saying, look, you know, the people in who are, you know, the pro good transportation people, right? A lot of them really want to step up enforcement. And I'm like, you know, enforcement's well and good, but it's like it only makes revenues. It doesn't actually increase safety.
Yep. And there are some potential kinds of enforcement that could theoretically increase safety, but they have rarely been attempted.
Yes. So also, right, what's interesting is that, you know, and unsurprising, I guess, is that it's like people voting when in this article, they talk about situations where, you know, where the citizens will vote, right, on whether there would be red light cameras or not, right?
And so I would vote yes for red light cameras in my own areas only because I want it to be painful for people to use cars.
Right, but here, Delgado pointed out that his hometown of Sweetwater has done away with red light cameras. They once made millions on them every year, but a public backlash led to residents voting 81% in favor of banning them. So the people who are obviously driving cars, it's not unsurprising that they would not want themselves to keep getting fined for running red lights, but that means those people are running red lights.
Yeah,
these people want, right? That it was a Democratic vote. It wasn't rigged or anything, but it's like, yeah, these people want to live dangerously. They want to endanger others. They want to run red lights and they don't want to have a penalty for when they do so.
But even worse, so think about this. If this is a revenue stream, in a sense, it is a tax on only shitty people, because we can talk about the stress
of driving. But 81% of the people are shitty.
Yeah, but we can talk about the stress and dangers of driving and how a lot of people are just bad drivers, but running red lights isn't just being bad at driving. That is making an active, fucked up choice.
Yeah. And so, but these people, they're either, right, they voted to do away with this. That means that either A, they're going to have to be taxed in some other means. The city will have to find another source of revenue, or they'll just, the city will lose millions of dollars a year, and that's millions of dollars less services and shittier. Their town will just get shittier.
I have a prediction for what's going to happen broadly in Florida as this happens. What will happen is all these places, the schools are going to get real shitty. People are going to complain. They're going to try to do a bond or raise taxes. They'll vote against that. And then all the money from property taxes will eventually get funneled to a small number of mostly white kids' schools, and all the other schools will just get worse and worse and worse.
Right.
And Florida's going to continue to be horrible.
We want things, but we don't want to pay for them, even if it means only like bad people pay for them. It's like, right?
Fun fact, Emily and I have been reading a lot about the details of the Know Nothing Party in America from the 1800s, and it's actually weirdly relevant here because I knew a lot about them. They were pro-slavery. They were super fucked up, bad people. They're very similar to modern Republicans in a lot of their platforms, except one. Imagine modern Republicans, except they wanted the best funded, highest quality schools and public services in the world. but they were also anti-tax. So what they did whenever they got control of a town is spent like crazy and borrowed like crazy and literally destroyed the entire local economy. No taxes, but want things, and fascist and racist.
Yep. So yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just saving this article because every time I keep having this discussion constantly because people really are mad, you know, and somewhat rightfully so, understandably so, that they want safer transportation.
Yep.
And they wrongly believe that enforcement will get them safety. And they see a lack of enforcement. They ride in a bike lane. No one tickets the car parked in the bike lane. They see people biking the wrong way or riding, you know, motorized vehicles in the bike over the bike path on the bridge. They see people, they go out and bike and they go out and walk and they see dangerous stuff everywhere and dangerous behaviors. And they want law enforcement to ticket and fine and tow and penalize all of those people.
And we're not even getting into the structure of law enforcement and how even if enforcing a law is a good idea, we can't trust our systems that enforce them to do so in a non-racist fucked up way.
Right. But they want that to happen. And I'm like, look, I understand that you want that to happen. It makes perfect sense. But it will not make you safer even if there were if the police caught every single person every single time. There have been speeding tickets for decades,
I have seen several studies. This might be a more mixed one, but I would have to do some research. But showing that in places where speeding enforcement is reduced over time, speeding just increases and increases and increases and crashes increase. A lot of people do slow down somewhat because they are a little bit afraid of getting a ticket.
But it hasn't stopped people from speeding. This hasn't stopped people from running red lights.
So actually, I had a crazy idea. I was actually saving this for a future Geek Nights idea that I had. But my crazy idea is this. Let's assume that this is possible first. Put cameras on a lot of roads everywhere like this. And basically, instead of doing the red light camera, like look for people around a red light and automatically mail them a ticket, have some sort of council, some sort of group where they watch these videos. Maybe they use AI to sort it in some way. And every quarter, in every municipality that's doing this, find the 10 like most egregious examples of reckless, dangerous driving, like the craziest crap, like the fart car weaving across 50 lanes and cutting people off and going into the bike lane and on the sidewalk. But then what you do is you have a jury trial, a special system where 50 regular people watch the video with like the license plate obscured, maybe not even from their town to avoid bringing mobs down upon some random person. And they vote on whether or not the owner of that car should still be allowed to have a car. And then you remove from the roads cars and thus drivers who are the absolute worst, most dangerous, aggressive individuals.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the worst idea, but I think that the overall thing is that, you know, you build up a complicated bureaucracy and then it itself becomes expensive and difficult, right?
Yep. It's case like in you point, need how would the New York City subway work if we got rid of the turnstiles and made it free and then got rid of all the infrastructure we have to pay for to manage the payments?
Right. It's like we need, I think the only solution is something that doesn't need so much, you know, like stuff built up and working all the time.
Hard mode, 80% of the people in a lot of places are going to vote to never have something like that.
Right. It's like if you just redo the street to be a different kind of street, it's like you don't need a bureaucracy. It's like, you know, that's the thing you do once and there it is, right? And it just sort of
and exists. It's working. There are tons of studies showing. I was reading some unrelated traffic studies around COVID stuff.
The only solution, that's the real solution, is to redesign your streets and then
so by and large, only blue states are redesigning streets this way.
I mean, not even them.
Yeah. And even in blue states, it's
only
like very
only European
areas.
Countries are doing it.
And the data shows every country in Europe that has done these kinds of changes, like traffic calming, has had radical drops in car deaths, like radical drops.
Yeah. The only way to actually get safety is to redesign the street.
So I learned something else doing that research recently that was kind of odd. Well, not odd. Like, I'm not shocked, but it was interesting. One, there was an increase in traffic fatalities during COVID, just generally. That only happened in the U.S. and in no other country.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there was an uptick in violent crime during COVID. That also only happened in the United States and in no other country. Mm-hmm. So the United States, we're just banned 1,000.
Yeah.
One last little news. So we live in New York, and thus we live near a place that you may have heard of called the Jersey Shore, which is basically the entire right coast of the state of New Jersey is one long beach, effectively. And different parts of it are fancier or less fancy. And generally, the further south you go, they get more naturey, but also in a lot of ways, and I say this with affection, shittier. But historically, since the dawn of air travel, the Jersey Shore has not been a place people go to because it's nice. It's a place they go to either because it's cheap or because it's near New York City or Philadelphia.
Exactly. It's not a destination beach you can fly to, like the aforementioned Miami or a tropical island. And it's not a place that a cruise ship will stop, right? There's Atlantic City. There isn't really, I mean, I guess there is sort of an Atlantic City airport, but it's not really, not like a real airport, right? You basically, if you want to get to Atlantic City from far away, you've got to like, you're really going to go to Philly. And then you're going to use maybe a bus or a train.
Nobody wants to go to Atlantic City from far away.
Right. Well, it's also Atlantic City ain't what it used to be. Back in the day, it was hot shit.
It was hot shit until air travel.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Jersey Shore, it's like, the beaches that exist for the people who are nearby, right? In Jersey and New York and some other places.
And because this wasn't like a super well-developed destination place, like a lot of beach towns in Jersey were kind of poor and things were cheap and poorer people had access to beaches and could afford to like rent a beach house. And
it wasn't like Long Island where the beaches were only for fancy people like the Hamptons.
Yep.
And they still are,
but
even though the water is way better in New Jersey,
the only reason I still go to the Jersey Shore is one, a lot of our friends can't travel that far that easily. So it's a place that like almost everyone we know can drive to. Like it's not that far. It's a couple hours from here. It's like 2 hours from here if there's no traffic.
But we also know someone whose family has a house there, so it's convenient for them.
Yep, lots of convenience factors there. But recently, and this isn't just this one article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I actually saw a bunch of unrelated articles for a few months now talking about this topic. Basically, tons of people bought properties all along the Jersey Shore and have been Airbnb-ing them for a while. And this has now hit a crescendo of as they've done this, they've renovated these places and they've raised the prices to the point that the average rental property in any of the parts of the Jersey Shore that are easier to get to, especially from New York City, are so expensive that if you pay the same price, you could fly to an actually good beach and stay in a similar nice place. And at that point, why go to the Jersey Shore if it only costs $100 more to go to like Cancun? Why not just go to Cancun?
The Jersey Shore is like, I'm going to my local beach because it's convenient. It's not the best beach. It's just the close and easy one to get to. It doesn't cost a lot of time and money. If it costs a lot of time and money suddenly, despite its closeness, why not spend the same time and money to go to a vastly superior beach?
Yep. And this has hit a crisis to where now like, places aren't getting rented because they're so expensive and the people who own them won't reduce the prices because they're actually in over their heads because these places aren't making the money they used to. And they kind of priced the entire demographic of people who would be willing to go to the Jersey Shore out of going to the Jersey Shore.
Yeah. I could talk all about landlording because I've been doing some landlording related investigations.
Landlording is in almost all cases an evil upon society.
Yes, I am of the opinion, and there is evidence to suggest that basically we should just, you know, find a way to eliminate or effectively eliminate landlording, and that would solve many problems.
Yep. I mean, like, wasn't the whole...
Like, if I was king, it would just be sort of in some way, it would be impossible or
slash
illegal.
But Scott, if you were king, you would have lords.
Landlord or to profit from being one.
Scott, you would have to be some sort of other autocrat, because if you were a king, you will in fact have lords.
Would I?
As
Do
a
I
king?
Have to?
If you're a monarch?
Who says I have to appoint lords?
So you're going
to
make...
I don't have to grant... The king can knight someone or give out
titles.
That's a
lord. That's
right. But I don't have to do that. I can just be like, nope, I'm not giving out any titles.
But
fuck
then
you,
from
I'm
where is the base of
myself.
Your power and how will you generate levies of the peasants?
With the sword that I have because I'm the king. come to court and try to stop me. Yeah. I got a sword. Right. Also, first law, only the king can have a sword.
The first argument of kings instead of the last.
That's right.
But anyway, things of the day. I hate to keep linking to YouTubes. I actually do have a queue of things of the day that are websites as opposed to YouTubes, but I laughed out loud at this. It's a YouTube short, and it just starts with this very simple premise of a guy is like, what's this tube in the closet in your bathroom? And the person whose house he's in says, like, oh, hold on a minute, and goes and gets his camera, comes back, starts filming him on his phone, and says, all right, what'd you just ask? And then the video starts at this moment where the guy's like, so what's the deal with this tube in your closet? And then you see there's like a weird, like, big pipe, like, going through the middle of this closet. And the video will take you on a very short journey, and you will never guess where this journey ends. That's my thing of the day.
I did, because it was in the thumbnail.
Yeah, the thumbnail ruins this, so click on it from the website, or it's going to be ruined. That thumbnail is unfortunate.
Well, I also have a YouTube, because, I mean, YouTube, it's like, you know, yeah, most things of the day are on YouTube, but I feel like what's going on these days is that most of the fun things of the internet end up being in video form, and yep. That's really the only place they're gonna be, other than TikTok, where I don't go.
There aren't that many websites left, and I've linked to most of them already as things of the day.
Yeah, it's like, how, you know, it's like, yeah, are there websites with fun, cool shit? Yeah, but it's like, there aren't like new ones that you're finding out about so constantly, but in your YouTube feed there's like tens of them per day, right, coming in all the time. So here's a person who is tired of chess hustlers in the park. So they made and manufactured something which is awesome, which is shock chess, which is a chessboard that fucking shocks you, and it's painful for real. And basically it has different modes. There's illegal mode, which only shocks you if like you were to try to make any illegal moves. Like, let's say it's the game just started, and like you touch your rook in the corner. It's like, obviously you can't move that on turn one.
Yeah.
It's trapped. And so if you touch it, that'll shock you, right? There's another mode that will like use, he's got a Raspberry Pi running like the basic chess bot off to the side, and it shocks you if you make a particularly stupid move.
Ooh, I like that mode a lot.
Yeah. But basically, there's different modes of it, of when it will shock you. And he tried to go and play against some hustlers, but that's only a very small portion of the video. Most of the video is about the manufacturing of the device, getting it to work, at how it works, you know, the lessons learned while making it, and et cetera, which is the interesting part.
I feel like there's a fine art to making a shock device that is painful enough to be funny and fun, but not dangerous or too painful.
I can't give a true opinion on how painful this one is, because I have not and will not touch it.
I would touch it. I would absolutely play chess on this thing. I've been tased
by the reactions. Yes. Judging by the reactions of the people playing it, that looks too painful for me. I'm going to stay away.
You know, it's hard to say, because if you've never been like for real shocked or tased before, very light shocks are way more sensory input than the average person thinks they're going to be. And it's not actually that much pain. It's a whole bunch of other sensations you're not expecting that suck. I guess I've been shocked a bunch of times in my life, so I'm kind of used to it, but... All right, let's get right into it, because, you know, this is another cars are evil, especially considering a stat.
Not just cars, but a lot of cars.
Well, not just cars, but I did a bunch more Googling after what I posted in our private Discord while we were talking about this earlier today. Based on all the research I have done over about 3 hours today, between 60 and 85% of all the noise pollution in cities in America is caused by road noise alone.
Yes. Even electric cars, which don't have the engine noise, the tire on ground noise is...
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the other thing I learned.
It is significant, right? In fact,
electric cars are louder than gas cars at speed.
Right. If you open up your window, right, in a city... Right. Even if there is no honking, even if there's no engines revving, even if there's no big guy with a big stereo in his car, what you hear is like this white noise, like, right? And that white noise is tires on road moving.
Yep. And it is so pervasive. So Emily, you know, we're talking about camping. But one of the places we camp is a place called Harriman Park. It's upstate from New York, like it ways away. It's pretty far away from like freeways and it's huge. So like we'll hike 16 miles and camp in a valley surrounded by mountains. And yet in the middle of the night, and you can hear the roar of the fucking New York State Thruway way off in the distance. It never stops. It's always there. You can't escape it. And there is evidence. There is a lot of evidence. And this evidence is growing, especially over the last 20 years, that that kind of noise pollution, like, and this is going to sound crazy, literally causes cancer, among other things. The noise itself is dangerous to human health and human sanity.
Yep. No, there's... it seems like every day, or you know, at least every week, I'm seeing like a new study. We're not talking about a new news story about an old study that talks about the very real physical damage that is done to the human body by excessive noises, loud noises, noises that are there for too long a period, right? We already know, obviously, hearing damage is obvious, right? If you go to too many metal concerts, yeah, you'll have hearing damage, right? And it was a while ago that there were reports, I think there's several studies that show how, you know, blood pressure and hypertension come from loud noises, right? So it's like, because it must activate, you know, the theory, I guess, is that it activates sort of the, you know, the sort of emergency, whatever, you know, part in your brain that's like, oh no, I got to be alert. This loud noise, this danger.
One of the things I read was more interesting. It had to do with sentition, like sentient sensory input versus the sentition of the rest of the brain, in that even if your conscious brain has filtered it out, because the human sentience, and actually mammal sentience, one thing it's super good at is it kind of ignores anything that is a constant stimulus, because that's a constant. It's looking for change and patterns. So you won't be conscious of that noise. Most people in America are not conscious of that road background noise until like they go out to the wilderness and then they don't hear it anymore and it sounds weird and then they hear their own tinnitus. But most of the rest of your brain, it doesn't stop hearing it. It just doesn't tell you the sentient part about it. That noise is still there and neurons are firing constantly about it.
So yeah, if you were to eliminate noise pollution, you would probably reduce, you know, I keep saying this a lot, but people look at like the CDC has this thing. It's like, what kills the most Americans, right? The thing that kills the most Americans, I guess, before they're supposed to die, because everyone's going to die eventually.
Yep,
but
the
thing that kills people before they, quote, should die prematurely is heart disease. But how the question that's still, I guess, unanswered is how much of heart disease, you know, you got to break it down. It's like, what is causing those different cases of heart disease? Some portion is going to be genetic, obviously. Some portion is going to be from air pollution, right? We already know that, you know, breathing in all sorts of nasty shit can give you, you know, contribute to heart disease. Some of it's going to be diseases. You know, someone, you know, it's not that many anymore, thankfully, but like my grandfather had, you know, the rheumatic fever, and that causes some heart damage. Some people just get diseases that damage their heart. That happens. Some people out there eat too many McDonald's, and that's going to give you heart disease, right? But how much of heart disease comes from noise pollution? It's a lot more than people realize. It could be as much as air. We don't know, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, not related to noise pollution, but also still related to cars. If someone is living in a car place, using a car to go everywhere, they're walking less. They're right. They're even trying to park close so they don't have to walk down the whole parking lot. That decreased physical activity in their life. How much has the car given them heart disease?
Never mind the air pollution
them, right?
of the car and the car culture
yes.
around them.
So, right. So if you add together the noise, the air pollution, and the lack of exercise, which are all car related, the question is that we don't know the answer to, what portion of the heart disease deaths, the number one killer of Americans, are because of cars?
And then the second, worse than that, because tons of studies show that car culture led to suburbanization, which led to significant social isolation, which itself is a cause of depression and anxiety, which is one of the contributing factors to heart disease and death.
Yep. And then On top of all that, the second killer of Americans is what the CDC labels as accidents, right?
Oh, yeah, under cars which, just actually literally directly killing people.
Right. But that includes all accidents, right? That includes falling down the stairs and...
Yeah, and
right?
The number one cause of accidents, if I recall correctly, is bathrooms.
Yeah, but in that big accidents number, the second most killer of people in the United States is... The car crashes. They're just calling them accidents, but yep. They don't say that. Say crashes because it's better and more accurate because they're not. It's not an accident when a car hits a person and murders them. So that's it. But the noise. The point is, the main topic of noise pollution is a much more significant chunk of that whole picture than was previously, you know, thought. And it's like constantly we're learning. Actually, no, it's bigger. It's even bigger than you thought. It's yep. extremely bad.
Now, you know this intuitively. If you live in a loud place, which is all pretty much any American city or any American suburb, if you have ever left that place, like you're in a car, you drive somewhere, you go out to the wilderness, like to stay at a cabin in the woods or a camp or something, and then you open the door to your car and it's so quiet out, you know that feeling. It's like this specific feeling of relief from something you didn't realize was annoying you.
Well, I think the opposite is someone who's lived in the woods the whole time. If they ever go to a city, right? It's like, it takes them a little while to get used to the noise.
Yep.
Much like someone going to a high altitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But you never fully get used to it. Like, living at a high altitude, not super great for you long term, actually. Living in a loud place also, even if you get used to it, not super great for you.
Yep. Another thing with noise pollution is that it has been shown to make people, you know, angry, irritable,
yep.
upset, etc. Yep. Right? How much of, you know, say road rage, right? But also non-car situations, right? How many fights in bars were because would not have happened if the music wasn't so loud in the bar?
Mm.
How many times, you know, there's, you know, been concerts and things where people got angry and shot each other. Would that have happened if the concert had the volume at a reasonable level? We don't know. We can't go back and test that. But we do know that excessively loud noise causes anger, right? There have probably been, how many cases has there been someone making loud noise that made the neighbor angry and the neighbor came over and murdered them because this is America?
Yep. Now, what's insidious about this, and this was a topic in a tech transfer class I took at RIT in college, my sophomore year. And this class was actually about the externalities of technology. It was all around like the ethics of deploying technology. And a lot of people at RIT took the same class because they talked a lot about certain native tribes and snowmobiles and elk as like one of the primary examples. Mm-hmm. But noise pollution actually came up in that class as an example of the externalities of a technology that societies all around the world just choose to ignore completely. Like, they don't think of it as an externality.
Well, I mean, they didn't think of air pollution as an externality until eventually.
Except they did. Right? There's tons of evidence that early industrialization, early petrochemical companies, early factories, even coal, they knew it was bad. They knew it was harmful. They knew it was dangerous. They covered it up, avoided it, minimized it, but they recognized its danger. Noise pollution is worse in that even people who care just don't recognize it as a problem. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is with noise pollution, I guess if you just try to think about it logically, right? It's like you think about air pollution and it's like you see that there are these particles of chemicals.
Black
like
soot
entering,
gets into my lungs and then I get the right, black lung.
Like,
okay.
Like it's easy for someone who, you know, doesn't, you know, read scientific studies to understand how that is hurting you, right? It's like you can see, you know, people can see, yes, guns are dangerous. A bullet hits you, you die, right?
Chemical but pollution. Noise, watch that documentary on Love Canal. Like, dangerous chemicals will fuck you up.
Or like, you know, food can be unhealthy for you. It's a thing that you put in your body, right? But people look at noise and they can understand how noise might mess up your hearing because it's, you know, it's really directly related to hearing, obviously, right? But to tell someone that like, no, loud noises can give you a heart attack, like for real, that could actually be the cause. It's like, it's the air moving back and forth and hitting your eardrum and that somehow makes your heart fuck up. It's
well, this is a blind spot.
That's
I
a
think.
True. All right, it's a fact, but to it's like to convince someone that that's true, you know, who's a lay person, is not as easy. It's not as obvious. Without science, we wouldn't even know that. We would never have figured that out without science.
Well, case in point, think about there's a related principle, not to get into quantum physics, but the whole, if you like, the thing doesn't happen until you observe it, or observing something can change the result. And a lot of people really misunderstand that, because we like to think of words or sounds are a sensation. And their logic and their language, they're not physical. They don't think about the physicality of it. In the same way that that whole observing the experiment changes the result is kind of made up, because the reality is the concept of observation doesn't exist. To observe something, you interact with it. A photon hits you that came away from that thing. So sound is directly interfacing with neurons and your biochemistry.
And yeah, it's basically what the mechanism that's happening is that it's causing, you know, the systems in your body, or, you know, your glands and your, you know, endocrines and all the different, you know, I'm not a doctor, right?
No.
But it, you
I'm
know,
reading a Wikipedia your, while we're talking. So.
Yeah, the unconscious parts of your body that are regulating your systems, right? When there's loud noises, that actually causes them to behave differently in a way that is not good for your health.
So we've been talking about human society and people up to this point. And if you scroll down to the Wikipedia, obviously it's fucking up animals too.
Yep, I was going to talk about animals next.
It's fucking up animals a lot, but I want to point out that one thing that noise pollution has, quote, emerged as a prominent stressor on is coral reefs. We're so fucking loud. We're
under the water.
We're killing the coral reefs, not just with sunscreen and global warming, but being loud.
Right. You would think that the fish would be the ones protected. You know, everything. It's like, the noise.
Sound travels so much better in water.
Right. But the sound has to be right. Here's the thing is like, you know, okay, sounds made above the water. Right. It's like if you go underwater, you can't really hear what's going on in the beach.
Yeah.
Right. You can hear maybe a little.
But I could go underwater at the other side of the pool and snap my fingers and Scott would hear it.
Right. And so what the noise pollution that is fucking up in the ocean animals is not the noise from the city. Right. It's the noise from the shit we're doing in the water. Underwater mining, submarines with sonar, big old cruise ships. Right. All that kind of shit is what is making we're making noise underwater, too, with all of our water related activities.
And that is literally directly one of the things killing coral reefs specifically.
Because animals don't know what's a artificial and unartificial noise, right? It's a fish.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fucking that it basically it's hard to think of a, you know, an animal or a life form that, you know, doesn't give a shit at all about, you know, sound that's happening in its environment.
I mean, sound is one of the primary senses of complex organisms, full stop.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a smaller organism that might not have any sort of ear of any kind, the vibration of a loud sound is going to physically impact it and make, you know, you think of like a bee, it's like, okay, I don't know if a bee has ears or not. Someone will probably tell me they do, but let's pretend that they don't. It's like, if you bring a bee to the club and you start blasting it, right? Yeah, that bee is going to have a hard time flying near the speakers because the air is going, bam, right? Is smacking that bee around. It's not good for the bee. You're physically assaulting it with air.
Now you want to get even worse. And I didn't get this from Wikipedia. This is something I knew because, you know, the whole debate around how it's hard to understand dialogue in shows now with movies with the whole speaker thing. So there are a ton of studies showing that people who, for any reason, struggle to understand human speech in media or in person, which can be caused by hearing loss, but can also be caused by environmental noise, that has a direct and possibly causal correlation with Alzheimer's. Not even the damage from the sound, it's the reduction in symbolic information coming in orally to the sentient part of the brain. You're understanding fewer of the words that are being said, and your brain's doing less, and that seems to be a contributing factor to a number of forms of dementia. In fact, one study even showed that people who are prescribed hearing aids but don't wear them, choose to not wear them, not forget to not wear them, obviously, that was controlled for in these studies, they are much more likely to develop dementia than people who wear the hearing aid they're prescribed. So yeah, noise noise is fucking us up, and yet it's insidious. This is something that's hard to talk about. It won't be taken seriously by a lot of people if you even
We need to basically do what we can to sort of, you know, bring the noise pollution, you know, discuss. Like, you can't really take any action right now.
I mean, we could ban leaf blowers.
Yeah, leaf blowers are a big one. That's the one that's annoying all the suburban people.
Yeah, right? But yet the really suburban people are also the ones who demand the use of the leaf blowers they proclaim to hate.
Exactly, right? It's like,
they're voting to get themselves punched in their own dicks.
Yeah, we could discuss the leaf blower topic itself for a long time.
Yeah,
but
just ban them.
The point I think that's worth discussing with the leaf blower is that, you know, there are noises which are loud that are at least somewhat arguably necessary sometimes.
Well, like you have to jackhammer something sometimes to build a building.
Exactly, right? It's like, okay, you want to do your construction on it to make a new building.
But pollution is the same way. We need to make some amount of concrete, but concrete releases CO2, so we should be judicious about it. Just like we have rules, you can only let this much of this chemical into the environment. We need more rules. You can only let this much noise into the environment.
Yep.
And New York has a lot of rules around this. Like in commercial and residential buildings, they cannot do certain kinds of work outside of very specific hours. Like our building, they have to warn us if there's going to be noise during the day or at night. And we get posted like, hey, for these 3 days, there's going to be noise between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. because we're jackhammering something.
All right. So the first thing is basically what I would recommend doing realistically is, number one, you should strongly consider, right, getting ear protection of various kinds and using it judiciously, right? Wear, you know, noise-canceling headphones or earbuds of some kind. If you're going to a loud place, right, wear earplugs to every concert you go to.
Yep.
Or, you
unless
know, anything
it's
like that.
Unamplified classic guitar.
Yeah. Even if you go to a loud sporting event, right, which normally wouldn't be loud enough to, like, you know, it's tolerably loud, you know, whereas like a concert is constantly loud. I go to the playoffs, I was wearing earplugs at MSG.
Regular hockey, I don't usually wear my automotive. Playoff hockey.
It's sort of sad because it's a little less fun with the earplugs, right? But
you take them out if it makes it to OT.
Sure, but it's also more fun because it's weird with the earplugs. I can actually clearly hear it blocks out all the people far away and it dulls all the crowd noise, but it makes the people nearby yelling really clear.
Yep, and
it sounds like they're just talking to me normally, even though they're yelling from like a few feet away or a few rows back. And so that normally, if I didn't have the earplugs, I couldn't hear them. They would just be part of the
Now that I think about
noise.
It, I've noticed that too, because I'd say 80% of the people who yell stuff are semi-incoherent, but every now and then there's someone who's actually legitimately funny and coherent nearby.
Yeah. The point is that this is a worthwhile investment. You know, if you can insulate rooms in your house from sound, if there's noises in your environment, if your home is not well sound insulated, anything you can do to block out noise pollution is a worthwhile investment. It will literally, evidence is showing us, add years to your life and increase the quality of your life. So even if it's like expensive to get some Apple AirPods Max or some Bose whatever, or it makes the concert less fun, do it anyway.
Now, before any of you say, oh, well, the government never did anything about this. So one, the Noise Control Act of 1972 actually establishes everything we talked about in significant detail. The U.S. has recognized around the same time the EPA started getting power and OSHA started getting real power that noise is very specifically dangerous to humans. This has actually been well known even by our government. The problem is we don't give any of the authorities enough power to make rules and enforce rules about noise despite recognizing the danger.
I don't think that that's the issue, right? I think it's that there are laws, like, you know, you could call in noise complaints in New York City and they're supposed to do something about them and they don't. Now, wait, earlier in this podcast, Scott, you said you don't believe in enforcement, and I still don't. I don't believe that noise, if they find all the people making noise complaints, that it would do anything. But of course, it's still worth pointing out they don't. If you call in a noise complaint, nothing happens, right? But, you know, my ridiculous
solution, towed away a car that had its alarm going off outside our apartment a couple years ago after
a car alarm. They will do that's, yep. But they won't, like, the cops won't tell the club.
They came
to
and
turn
they just
down.
Towed it away, and it was still making its car alarm noise while they towed it. It was really funny.
Yeah, but if I was in charge, right, what I would do is, you know, there are certain kinds of calls you can make to the city that basically get no action on them. And noise complaints are one of the most common calls, and they almost always result in nothing being done. If I was the mayor, I would make a noise complaint task force of some kind who is separate from the police, whose only job would be, no, you actually got to take real action on every single noise complaint
now,
that comes in.
Now, the action, to your point, might not be go bust heads or something. The action might be collect the data, investigate, use research, and experiment to find out what are effective interventions.
Yeah, actually try to do something about it.
Wait, Scott,
100 noise complaints in the neighborhood.
You're
that club, right? Because that club is too loud. It's like, all right, should we jail the owner of the club? Should we? All right, well, first we can talk to them, right? Yep. You know, we don't have to punish them, but we can take away their liquor license, or we could padlock their club, right?
Or,
it's like this real action that could be taken there.
Maybe the complaint is about an outdoor special concert, but that concert only happens every other year for one night. Maybe that's acceptable, but it needs a permit. Like, I don't know. But Scott, you are advocating something crazy. You are advocating evidence-based public policy.
Oh, no.
Imagine what society could be like if governments did things based on evidence and changed what they did based on evidence.
Right. The last thing that I would suggest you do, right, that's very important, is to do exactly what we're doing now, which is to simply recognize the problem of noise pollution, understand it, and just express when you have a chance to that you believe this is a problem. You don't have to propose solutions or propose specific actions or anything. You just have to basically get other people to agree, right, that noise pollution is a problem and is harmful. Because if people simply believe that, right, if more people just say, yes, fuck loud noise, and I think that is a bipartisan, cross-partisan thing, right? Other than the portion of our society of people who like making loud noises on purpose.
But those people, we just smash their noise-making machines.
Other than the people with the fart cars, right? If you go to some all-Republican town, there's going to be people with the fart cars there, but there's also going to be old people who really want them to shut the fuck up. There's going to be people with leaf blowers, and there's going to be the cranky old Republican lady who really hates the leaf blowers, right? This is not a one-sides issue here. If you just get people to agree that that's a problem, recognize the problem, recognize the scope of the problem, and then repeat it, right? Then that will lead eventually to momentum behind an action, whatever that action is, if as long as the you know, energy behind being mad about it is high enough.
What you said is interesting because this edges into organizational theory and my actual professional job in that is exactly how large organizations, which could include governments, but I'm talking about bureaucracies, not necessarily governments, that's exactly how you affect change. The first step to any problem is to convince a majority of the people who have a stake that it even is a problem. If you don't have a majority of people who agree something's a problem, you cannot solve whatever you think that problem is. You just cannot. Trying to solve a problem without a majority who agree it's a problem is basically impossible. And if you can't get a majority of people who agree, but you still think it's a problem, your only job is to try to convince more people that it is a problem. You don't even need to convince them that how or what to do about it. You just have them to get to agree that it is a problem.
Mm-hmm. So I just want anyone who, the five listener who is listening to this, just
there
in
are
your
currently
mind,
14 people listening to this right now.
All 14 bots.
15, someone just joined. And
14
posted.
Bots and one human.
Whoa,
right.
Rim just started on all. I'm studying social linguistics and jurisprudence in government and business model innovation right now. I'm going to look into organizational theory by name.
That's the AI bot talking, responding to what we're saying. But anyway, all I want you to do is in your mind put the noise pollution next to all the other pollutions, the air pollutions and you know, chemical pollution in the water. Noise pollution is just as bad as those and is severely harmful to humans, and just internalize that, and then progress will have been made to making people live longer and better lives.
Yeah. This has been Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at frontrowcrew.com for show notes, discussion, links, and more.
Remember, Geek Nights is not one, but four different shows. Mondays are science and technology. Tuesdays, gaming and games. Wednesdays are animation and comics. Thursdays are arbitrary and indiscriminate. Geek Nights is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license.
Geek Nights is recorded live with no studio and no audience. But unlike those other late shows, it's actually recorded at night.
And the patrons for this episode of Geek Nights are Alan Joyce, Lakiju Dread, Lily Tenebrae, Case Care Makes Music, Chris Sadad, Christopher Orr, Clinton Walton, Finjol Hayes, Penny Reimer, Rebecca Dunn, Sam Erickson, Trevon Horrell, and a bunch of people whose names I will not say. Tonight I'm going to leave you with a fair warning that this is the audio equivalent of a cognito hazard, and if you hear what's about to play, it's going to be stuck into your head, and it might be there until the day you die. So without further ado, tonight I leave you with...